Hello and welcome to What a Hockey, the podcast about Texas hockey and the culture and stories surrounding it. Please, as always, make sure to like and follow along on all our social media platforms, all of them at What a Hockey. Yes, including LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. I am Jason Aguirre, your host for today. I am joined by just myself today as we navigate the waters of the off season. I know it's a sad time for all of us right now. And as much as I'd like to be talking to the gang, it's just not that time. One quick note about the podcast. We are putting together our website, and it should be live very, very soon. So keep your eyes peeled out for that. Today, we have a very special Throwback Thursday for you all, as the gang talked to Vern Fiddler a few years back. Yes, it's weird to say that a few years back when we talked about this on the podcast, but it's been that long. I know I'm grateful for all the French fries who have supported us over the years, so please sit back and enjoy this replay of episode number 11, The Gang Talks to Fern.
All right, welcome back to another episode of WADA Hockey. We've got a really amazing episode for you guys coming up, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, the home of pond hockey as it is right now. We've got videos out the wazoo of people just making their own ponds in their backyards with their pools, whether or not they know it's going to cost them thousands of dollars or not. We've got a fantastic show ahead of you guys. We are minus one, but we are plus one. So we're coming out even on this episode, and we'll dive a little bit deeper into that here in just a moment. First and foremost, just want to say what's up to Patrick. How's it going? Are you staying warm, staying safe?
Man, doing our best. We luckily, we're kind of smack dab in the middle of some critical infrastructure here up in Addison. So haven't been without power since this started, which certainly can't say the same for a lot of people. So we've been super fortunate. Braved the roads a little bit today. DNT was actually really clear, which I was surprised about. And of course, you know, there's ice everywhere and people are still doing 70 for God knows what reason. So I was just puttering along at 45 in the right lane, trying to stay out of the median and out of everybody else's way. Because I'm not used to driving in the snow.
I don't think anybody didn't go well.
No, my first wreck was because I was in high school and rear-ended a lady driving by myself in snow. My mom was out of town. I had no idea what I was doing. So naturally, that was my first wreck when I'm by myself and I give her a call and she's like, you know, shit happens.
Let it ride.
If you're fine, then that's all that matters.
Well, glad that you're safe. Like I said, we are minus one. Jason is not with us this week. He is overseeing the Parks and Rec for the beautiful city of Rowlett. If you guys are listening from the Rowlett area, make sure to thank your local Parks and Rec representative because they are the reason that the parks will be open back up. But our plus one today, besides myself, because I'm more of like a plus point one, we have got Dallas Stars legend, alternate captain to the Stars, friend to you and me, former center left wing for the Dallas Stars, Phoenix Coyotes, Nashville Predators, New Jersey Devils. I mean, he ended his playing career with a total of 877 games in the NHL with 104 goals and 157 assists for a total of 261 points. Friends, neighbors, welcome Vern Fiddler to the show. Vern, how are you?
I'm good, guys. It seems like I'm staying a little bit warmer than you guys, and we actually can drive on our road, so we've got full fridge of groceries, and it seems like online and on Instagram and all the videos I'm getting from Texas, you guys are getting a little taste of the Canadian weather and winter, and it looks like you guys are having a lot of fun with it, so good on you guys.
Yeah, we are the South. I guess we'll take the "we are the North" saying, and we'll tweak it a little bit. We are the South. Well, before we jump into asking you a couple of questions about your career and about your time here in Dallas and Texas, what are your thoughts on the recent cancellations of the games that we just saw? We chatted a little bit about it before the show. How do you feel everything was handled from the NHL standpoint? Obviously, it wasn't their call. Now that we've taken a dive a little bit deeper into the situation, it was more on the city as opposed to the NHL. But how do you feel like everything was handled from your point of view?
Yeah, you know what? It's obviously one of those years with the pandemic, and you know, the NHL and the owners and you know, the cities are all kind of trying to work as it comes along at them. And you know, obviously the city of Dallas was throwing a curveball yesterday with this winter storm. So you know, there's not much you can do with the storms that come flying in. But you know, the NHL, they have to kind of. The last thing these guys want to do is cancel a game, because there's already been canceled games with the COVID, and guys, you know, they're going to have to make up a ton of games. And trust me, the last thing they want to do is cancel another game, never mind two. So they were probably waiting to the last minute before they made an announcement, because they were probably trying to do everything in their power to make that game happen. And it sounded like there maybe just wasn't enough power in the city of Dallas to keep the American Airlines up running.
Well played. That was a great play on words.
But at the same time, you got to keep people safe. The problem that they ran into was, I think a lot of people were already at the building and outside the building. So, you know, you put a few people at risk, but if they're out and driving and out and about and that, they're probably used to the roads and highways with snow on them. But, you know, you can't really, there's not much you can do with a curveball like that. They got to do what's best for the league and what's best for the city to keep everybody safe.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's just an unfortunate turn of events the way that things happened that evening. Luckily, they turned around today. They canceled the game, I believe, around 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, and just, you know, made that call really early. I believe they've also canceled tomorrow night's game. The Dallas Mavericks are supposed to play the Detroit Pistons in Dallas. They've gone ahead and canceled that. Thursday, I believe the Stars are back in town to play once again. So we'll see kind of how the weather goes from there. Real quick, I do want to give a quick shout out to Texas Hockey Apparel. I'm sporting their gray Texas Hockey Apparel, green, black, state of Texas hockey player hoodie. Check it out on their website, texashockeyapparel.com. Garrett has been reposting people on their makeshift ponds all week long so far, and weekend long. So check it out. That's what I was wearing before the game got canceled, and kept me warm the whole time. Super comfy. And as Jason would like to say, their hoodies feel like it's just a warm hug all the time.
And mine's been keeping me super warm in this weather.
Yeah,
Patrick, it's like my base layer.
Since you brought that up, has your wife stolen that yet? Because like I said, that hoodie is susceptible to being stolen from now on. You know that.
She has not tried it on yet, so I think we're safe for now. Okay. Once she tries it on, though,
you're buying another one.
Yeah, probably.
Well, let's have a little bit of fun. I mean, Vern, you were with the team for quite some time. You were, you know, on record as saying, you know, you made Texas your home for quite a while, and you know, it was a really cool experience to see you grow with the team and become the alternate captain at one point. But what was really cool is you made the transition from playing to coaching, traveling down to Cedar Park to gain experience with the Texas Stars, and eventually landing as an assistant coach with the Kelowna Rockets of the WHL. Are you still coaching right now, pandemic aside?
No, we're still with the government officials haven't allowing us to put a start date on our season. We've just been sitting around doing nothing too. Our boys are back in all in their hometowns all over Western Canada, and we're hopeful that we'll get something going mid-March, but we're basically waiting for the government to allow us to name or to go ahead with a start date. We won't have any fans in the building. We're basically just going to have 24 games in 48 days just to get these kids in front of some scouts, and you know, it'll be a grind, but at least it's something. I mean, you know, I know for myself, if I wouldn't have had my 20-year-old year as an overage in the Western Hockey League, I wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have got that extra year of development and, you know, got in front of 50 scouts a night like we play in front of. So, you know, it's really sad for the young men, but at the end of the day, we're hopeful and we're crossing our fingers that we can get something rolling here in, you know, mid-March, maybe early April. So it'll be a grind for 48 days, quick 24 games, but at least they'll get something in, and we're really crossing our fingers and hoping that we can get that in.
Yeah, and to kind of put into perspective for people that are listening that are particularly Stars fans, you accompanied, not only were part of Kelowna, Jamie Benn and Blake Como, two current Stars, also went through Kelowna at one point in their careers and played with the team. So this is not just a flash in the bucket, you know, organization. This has pumped out tons of NHL Stars. So super important to keep those kids 24 games in 48 days. That's a wallop on the legs. That's got to be.
Yeah, oof. It's you know what, Kelowna's a great city. It's one of the most decorated WHL franchises in the whole league. I played here myself. Obviously, Jamie Benn, Blake Como. There's walls of NHL guys and names that you could go down the list forever. So it's definitely a unique junior team that has a lot of history, won a lot of Memorial Cups, and had a lot of success developing young guys and producing NHL players. So it was an honor to come back here when I got offered the position to kind of, you know, develop as a young coach. I knew in Dallas I had a nice cushy job there, but at the same time, all my family's back here, and you know, we wanted to get back to a little bit closer to the grandparents for a couple years. And not saying that I won't be back anytime soon, but it's you know, we definitely consider Dallas home, and that'll be always be our home. But we're just taking a little bit of an extra long vacation here to, you know, take advantage of some family time,
escape the cold,
and for me to develop as a coach.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. So in your time with the Stars, you know, I think it was pretty obvious to see that you were a locker room guy. You kind of kept the mood light. You seem to always be having, you know, just having fun playing the game and boosting morale. Who are some other notable locker room guys that you spent your time with in the within your career in the NHL? Not maybe just with the Stars, but overall, who were some of your most notable and favorite locker room guys to be in there with?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had I always had really good luck with teammates. I always had, you know, when I was a younger kid, 20, 21 years old, coming into Nashville organization, Scott Nickel, he really took me under his wing, and he taught me that, you know, there's times when you need to lighten the room up, but there's also times where you need to be a stern leader and a guy that your teammates know when you get on the ice, you're gonna bring it, and it's all about effort. No matter how much skill you had, there's one thing you can control is how hard you worked and what you brought to the table. And as far as competing, you could always bring that. You know, maybe you're not going to win every battle, but as long as you know your teammates know you're going to show up. He was one of those guys that really instilled that in me, because there was nights where he'd be joking around before the start of the game, and we'd be just dying laughing. And then we'd get in the game, and I was a young kid, right? So I just thought the game was going to be easy and you didn't have to focus. And he would come after the first period and just rip me a new, you know what. And I learned a lot from him, that the timing of when to be, you know, pissing around, and then when it was time to work. And when you stepped on that ice, it was time to work. And, you know, in the dressing room, I was a guy, I always kept it light. I was, you know, joking around, and, you know, if obviously I was serious, I took my job serious, but I had a pretty good read of when something needed to be lightened up in the room, or, you know, someone maybe needed to be knocked down a notch if they're getting a little bit too confident, say something to them where everyone would kind of, you know, laugh or maybe start chirping at them a little bit to kind of bring them down. But we always had a great group of guys in Dallas with, you know, I remember my first couple years there with Steve Ott and Trevor Daly that used to drive into the rink, and you just had a blast with them. You couldn't wait to get in the car to get telling stories, and and get ready to then go on the ice and battle with them, because you knew they were going to bring everything they had that night. So it was that we've always had a really good group of guys in Dallas.
Yeah, you bring up Daly and Ott, man. Those are some guys that I miss on a regular basis. Daly just retired. I mean, that guy had a hell of a career. He was in the show forever. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing to see the evolution. Speaking of, are you keeping up with the NHL day to day now, or are you pretty focused on the home life?
No, I my son's 13, so he's into all his fantasy, and he goes to a big hockey academy here. They go to school till noon every day, and then they do all their off ice workouts and skating up in Penticton, British Columbia, which is about 45 minutes south of Kelowna. But they have this fantasy league, and that's all they talk about. So we've really honed into every team, and you know, we really enjoy watching the Canadian division because it's, you know, it's all of our homeland teams, and there's been some really good battles started between, you know, teams like Toronto and Calgary that we usually don't see. They only play once, a home and away each year. So, you know, these three-game segments have really brought out these playoff atmospheres during the regular season. And it's, you know, there's games where you wish there was a fourth game just to kind of see what that would bring out. But we've really enjoyed watching it. We're on the, you know, Pacific time zone. So, you know, we're not usually home for the out east games. So we'll maybe catch a little bit of the central time zone games. And then we usually catch all the ones out in Mountain and Pacific time.
You got
North Division. Go ahead, Patrick.
You got any fantasy tips? Because my team can certainly use some help.
You know, Patrick, it's funny you bring that up. We're playing each other right now. This week is Patrick and I's week. So it's Patrick's. What place are you in now? The fifth place, Patrick's fifth place team with a sad emoji?
I'll have to pull it up and let you know. I was confident.
Well, you're going to get defeated. My team name is Kachuk If You Buck, because I got the Kachuk brothers on the team. And I think I'm averaging like 80 hits a week. So I didn't mean to suck you into fantasy talk just as you thought you'd escaped, but here we are.
I dropped down to fifth place, by the way. So I need to update my team name even further from that team third name. Place.
And what areas I just talked about hits and how high my hit count is, I guess you could say, but you don't see a lot of hits in this day and age. So do you feel like that area of the game has changed the most? And if not, what area of the game do you feel like has made the biggest transition from the time that you played to now?
Yeah, you know what? There is a huge difference. Having a son that plays minor hockey, you see why the game is changing so much. And, you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know, at the end of my career, some of these kids that were coming in, for example, like, Kevin Fiala in Nashville, and you know, some of these young kids that come in, their skill level is outrageous. Like, it's at a whole nother level where, you know, I always like to use my backhand, and I thought, like, well, I got decent skill. Well, that I don't have anything on these kids. And I think the biggest reason because of the all the coaching they have, like, you look at, for instance, my son and his team. They have a skills coach, they have mental coaches, they have skating coaches, they have, you know, hitting coach, they have every kind of coach you can name. They have that somebody in their corner teaching them something. So, you know, every day they're learning a different skill, whether it's a toe drag or a push and pull shot, whatever. They constantly have a puck on their stick. They're always working on their edges with skating. They have outdoor rinks to go try this stuff at. They're on the ice a couple hours a day, where, you know, we were taught in Canada at my age, like, whoever could dump the puck the best and get the puck down low and play that heavy game, that's what we learned how to do. We all had to skate, be strong skaters, obviously, to make it to the NHL. But the skill level that these young guys are coming in with is, you know, you're seeing these lacrosse goals all over the place. Like, that was unheard of when I was growing up. Like, no one could do that. For one, the sticks, you couldn't do it because they were wood. And for two, we just didn't have the skill level. You're seeing, like, these behind the legs. And, you know, all these kids are so creative. It's, you know, I give them a lot of credit because for one, they got the balls to try it, and for two, they work on it so long that they master it and they can do it. So, you know, there's a lot more skill. Back in my day, there was a little bit more physical play and you had to set the tone that way, but these young kids set the tone now by making these dazzling plays in the neutral zone, or, you know, high end between the legs move around a D-man, cutting his hands off and taking the puck to the net. So, you know, there's a huge difference, but I like the way that where the game's going. Like, you watch these games and, you know, like the Edmonton and who did Edmonton play last night?
Didn't they? It wasn't the Maple Leafs, was it? Because the Maple Leafs got...
Well, they were going back and forth.
That was Ottawa.
It was sick. No, they ended up losing, but it was like the game was just back and forth, goal after goal. McDavid, Dreisaitl, Chiasson had a couple goals. Like, it was just like, that's the kind of game you want to watch. Like, obviously in the playoffs, a 1-0 game is fun to watch when it's playoffs, but during the regular season, I want to see goals. I want to see plays. I don't want to see how good a goalie is. Like, I'm a guy that I like to see offense, and, you know, and then it's created from defense. So, like, I've really liked where the game's at right now.
Well, that being said, you did mention one thing that was kind of your go-to was the backhand. What areas of the game do you kind of wish were still around from when you were, say, you know, and say in Dallas? Like, do you wish that more guys would try for the backhand? I know Gerionov with the team right now is real big on the backhand, but do you see a part of the game that you wish people would kind of bring back?
I wish that you could hook. You know the old school, like, slingshot forecheck, you hook the guy and you
go. Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know why they took that out of the game. I like that clutching and grabbing. Like, I think it makes guys compete harder. Obviously it slows the game down, but like, you watch these old games of, like, you know, like even Bob Bassin. I watched a game, it was a throwback game a couple of weeks ago, and Bob Bassin was trying to kill guys out there, hooking them, slashing, elbow in the face. Like, it was just crazy. So, you know, you like to see the physical side, and now someone gets hit and it's automatically a headshot and a suspension. Like, you know, like, if you got your head down,
yeah,
you got your head down coming through the neutral zone, that's your fault. Like, obviously you want to take the dirty
100%.
Stuff. 100%. There's times where a good hit's a good hit, but the ref's so scared to make a mistake and get in trouble from the league that he just calls an automatic penalty. You know, there's four of them out there. Like, there is hitting still left in this game, and there's barely any fighting, so... Mm-hmm. Hitting is the thing that can keep these players honest, and I think they got to allow a little bit more of that hitting.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think it's funny that you brought up the fact that, you know, guys are you know, a little dirtier when they're in the corners like that, and you got guys playing for their lives. I mean, prime example, I was watching Tampa Bay yesterday, and an old star, Jamel Smith, got in a scrap, and all I could think was, he's just fighting to stay on that team.
Exactly.
And I know, I don't get me wrong, I completely understand that the CTE and the studies behind it and wanting, you know, player safety first. But I mean, those hits and those fights, sometimes that's the difference between staying on that team and, you know, being in the minors or
that's
getting
right.
waived.
Yeah, he's just trying to make a name for himself and stay there. I mean, it's bugging me now that the Jets, Winnipeg Jets, that's who they're
right
back and forth.
Looks like they fell to Shifley, who's done some damage against the Stars recently, not this year obviously, but 1 goal, 2 assists. Kyle Connor, Neil Pionk, Blake Wheeler, looks like 10 different guys had points in that game. That's,
yeah, Patrick,
solid.
I think we talked about this earlier, speaking of the northern teams, specifically over kind of towards where Fids is at now on that side of the on that side of the nation, there's a team, Vancouver, the Vancouver Canucks, and they had a coach at a time.
That's my
think
claim.
You are an incredible segue artist. That takes us to next question, which is
I'm just dishing the
Beeksa impression. What's the backstory? What spurned it? Any other solid impressions you want to share with us?
Well, you know what? We had always played against each other, Kevin and I, and we came into the pros at about the same age. Like, we're both, I think, 80s, or he might be a 79 or 81, whatever. 1 year, maybe, age difference. So we came into the minors at the same time. He was playing in Manitoba Moose, and I was playing in Milwaukee, and we were constantly playing each other, and it was the same thing. Like, we constantly were at each other and scrapping and slashing and hacking each other. And then we both kind of made the jump to the NHL the next year, and same thing. Like, he was in Vancouver, I was in Nashville, so you'd play each other 4 to 6 times a year, and it was just always something. Like, we'd get yapping at each other, and you know, this was probably my 7th, 8th year in the league against playing against them. And we were in Dallas, and Dan Hamhuis had just got signed there, and I played with Hammer in Nashville, and we were out for dinner the night before, and I told him, I said, I just can't handle this Bieksa kid. Like, he's like, he told me, he goes, if you guys were on the same team, you guys would be best friends. And I said, well, I don't know about that. And I said, he's always got that bitter beer look on his face. Like, he's always pissed off at everybody. So I was at the faceoff dot, and I got kicked out, and I went to the wing, and he slashed me on the top of the laces. And he's like, let's go. And I'm like, no, I ain't. He's tough, right? I'm like, I ain't fighting this fucking guy. So then I just started making faces at him, and then he was kind of chirping at me, and I skated by the bench, and he was sitting on the bench, and I gave him the old, what I thought looked like him.
It was pretty spot on.
Yeah, he saw me, and he just couldn't stop laughing. And I had no idea. Like, I didn't even know that. I just went back to the bench and mind my own business. And that night I went home. I remember I got home, and I think it was a day game, and I got home that night, and I was watching Hockey Night in Canada. And Jamie phoned me, and he said, what the hell did you do to Bieksa? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I didn't even think of it, right? And he goes, it's viral on the internet. Like, he goes, you're going, like, it's going all over the place because Vigneault was laughing so hard. that's the gist of the story.
I mean, that's something that I've always gone back to, and it's just one of the funniest hockey clips I think I've ever seen, because you see your face, and you're doing the shoulders, and it's almost like a Conor McGregor before Conor McGregor type walk, and then you flash to him on the bench, and he is just, it's funny because, like you said, he's just got like kind of a bitter beer face mug, but yeah, he's trying so hard not to break, and then it just happens. And you've got the commentary going, and everyone's in on it. The people behind him are laughing at him. It was it was peak comedy gold.
Yeah.
Coach trying to cover up his face with his note card there. He's cracking up.
Well, you know what? You know what's funny about it is, like, so Vancouver is only 4 hours from us west, right? So, like, Kelowna, British Columbia, where I am, like, everybody's a Canucks fan. Like, I mean, everybody. Like, there's a lot of Alberta people here from oil and gas. Like, they all buy places here on the lake. But I'll go to the grocery store, and it was the worst. It couldn't have happened to a worse team, because they all watched the game. So coming back to my summer house where I was, you know, kind of stay under the radar, right? I'd be at the grocery store, and people would be coming up, and that was the funniest thing. And people would be driving by my house and yelling at me, do the Bieksa face. I mean, I'd go to a restaurant and I'd have people coming up to me and, oh, give us a Bieksa face. And like, it was just like, if I would have done it and it would have been against the New York Islanders, I would have never heard about it again. But being now, I come back here every summer. We came back to Kelowna, and that's their team. So it was like, if I got a dollar for every time someone asked me to do that face, I'd be very wealthy.
that's awesome. Well, I can safely say that's probably if I were to bring your name up to a lot of Stars fans, that's one of their favorite memories of you on the ice. But speaking of memories on and off the ice, what would you say is probably your fondest memories here as a Dallas Star, one on the ice and then one off the ice?
Probably my favorite memory in Dallas was it was always so fun in the playoffs, because you'd come out and you could hear the fans underneath in the dressing room before that, like, first home game. I remember playing, where did we go? I think we were in Anaheim the first two games. And I remember coming home for that third game, and, like, you know, the buzz is around town and everyone's at the games and it's sold right out. They got stuff going on outside the rink, and just coming out for those playoff games, I'll never forget. I remember it was like probably like the 18th minute of the first period of my first playoff game in Dallas. And I remember, I'm pretty sure I said it to Brandon Morrow. I go like, are these people going to sit down? And he goes, no, in playoffs here, everyone stands the whole game. And I'm like, holy fuck. I felt bad for my parents because I'm like, they're going to have to stand the whole game because, you know, they're they're not used to that. And I remember actually having the next in game four, I remember my dad saying to me, he said, like, I can't stand the whole game. We're going to have, and so we ended up moving him into a suite. you know, those were always great memories. The building would get rocking, and you know, there was a couple other you know, incidents. I remember my breakaway falling Lindy Ruff, where I think it was like four or five games left, and we were really hanging on for a playoff spot, and we went to a shootout against Nashville, my old team, and played with Pekka for years. He knows I had one move, my backhand shelf move, and out of nowhere I'm sitting on the bench, like basically got my skates untied. I'm like, there's no way I'm shooting. Like I had just taken a face off at the end of the third period, and Lindy Ruff was our coach, and a couple shooters went and nobody scored. And I remember Roos going to me, Fitz, you're up. And I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, Lindy said you're going. He had tapped me on the back, and I just didn't think anything of it. And I look back at him and he goes, Fids, you're up. And I go, I got no fucking edge on my skate. I said to Sudsy, I go, Sudsy, you got to do something. Sudsy, Steve Sumner is our equipment guy. He's just stoning my skate. And he looks at me and he goes, you can't turn left to right. And I said, that's fucking all I got. That's my only move.
I'm going, all I got.
I'm going backhand cheese toast. I'm like, he's like, well, he goes, I wouldn't turn that way. And I go, well, I said, I got to fucking try. So I remember I'd always come with speed. And I was thinking, there's no way. He just stoned and, you know, he had the thing on my skate. And I said, there's no way I'm going down. And I remember I swung out and I came back in and I went to go back left to right, like to cut in. And I lost an edge at the blue line and I went down. And the puck went ahead of me, and I'm just sinking in my eyes. Like, and I think if we didn't get 2 points in that game, I think it made it tougher for us to make it. We needed to keep it alive. And for him to put you know, I was a veteran guy. I'm pretty sure that's why he did it. You know, I was going to probably be a little bit calm and cooler than some of our younger guys. And yeah. I remember Pekka, Rene kind of gave the old, oh, I should go out at him. And then the puck wasn't far enough. I grabbed the puck back, and he knew I was going backhand shelf, and I went to the backhand shelf. I pulled it back to my forehand, and I don't know how it went in, but it went in. And I remember coming to the bench after, and I was pissed. Like, this fucking picked me to go on a shootout, and I didn't have an edge on my skate. I told him that, and, you know, our season was on the line. I got back in the dressing room after, and I'm like, I'm walking around. I'm like, he's like, what happened? I go, I had no fucking edge on my skate. He goes, I go, why would you put me? Like, I'm not an offensive guy. He goes, we were looking at it before, and your numbers, like shootout, he was like, you were whatever, 5 for 15 or whatever. You had one of the best percentages. So he's like, I've seen your backhand move. I figured you're going to do it. So it worked out. So that's where that came from.
There you go. What would you say you look back fondly on as far as off the ice? Obviously, you guys spent a lot of time here. You say you call it home. How do you feel about the off the ice stuff?
Yeah, you know what? The people were amazing. We lived in Frisco. We were when I first signed with the Stars, we contacted other players and stuff, and the majority of the team lived out in Frisco. And at first, we were like, I'd like to be a little bit closer to the rink, but ended up being like, you know, our new hometown. We were out there for almost 10 years. My kids basically grew up there. They went to school there. When I left to go to New Jersey, my family just commuted. They stayed, and we wanted to keep them in school and their sports. So I'd have to say that the community that we were involved in, obviously the Texas people were so outstanding. Like, it didn't matter whether we won or lost. They were always very gracious at grocery stores, and, you know, you'd be at the mall and people would be very polite and never, you know, make you feel uncomfortable. And I always would treat the kids outstanding. Like, my wife would bring my kids down to the to the glass to watch warm up. My kids were, you know, 8 and 9 at that time. And, you know, they were always like making ways to make them feel special. And that's why we love Texas so much. My kids are all about the yes, sir, yes, or, you know, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, opening doors like the Texas ways. And, I'm very grateful that my kids got to 10 years of living in that, to see that that's how you have to act and that's how you have to treat people with the utmost respect, and you're polite and you're gracious to everybody that walks your way. And that's one of the things. And then my charities that I always, the people were so great with all my charities, FIDS Kids. We had a chance to meet a lot of unfortunate kids that were battling cancer and got to meet so many great people. One of my number one fans that I'm sure you guys know, Chloe, she was one of my first FIDS kids that came out to our game, and she was fighting cancer, fought leukemia twice. So just meeting all these kids that, you know, we could get them out of the hospitals and take them away from what they were actually going through that day and have them at games, that was a huge accomplishment on my wife and my part, that we really enjoyed to meet all those people and help them out as much as we could and give back to the community that was so good to us.
Well, I can definitely attest to the whole Southern hospitality, and we look forward to bringing you back to the area. And hopefully at that time we can say that you're back in the Stars organization in one way or the other. Cause we'd love to have you back. We loved when you were here as a Star, and obviously enjoyed having your family think fondly of the area. And if you haven't been back to Frisco, it's blown up. I mean, it's unbelievable.
We're aware of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So, you know, we've talked a lot about hockey, and obviously there's some Southern hospitality thrown in there. You know, Texas is known for country music, and everyone wants to know, because there's a rumor that was going around for quite some time that you caught George Strait's hat at a concert.
I did. Yeah, we were. It's actually me and Marty Turco, and I were at. I don't know. We were somewhere like a week before, and we were, you know, fixing to kind of get to this concert, and one of our buddies that we both knew from Nashville, he was coming in, and he called me, like, just coincidentally called us like both 4 days before and said, "Hey, listen, I'm coming into town. I want to get after it. Like, we're coming in for George Strait." Like, and he worked for George Strait. So, you know, he always would connect us with different country stars when I was playing in Nashville, and then when Marty would ever visit Nashville. So we kind of hooked up, and Marty and I, we at first we didn't go together, but we ended up together in this EJ's, Bernice's seats, and he was working, so he had all the backstage and we had all that, you know, the VIP passes and all that. And, you know, we were getting after it, having our vodkas, and, you know, the concert was unbelievable. Like, they had every country music star in town. Like, Kenny Chesney came up and they did all these duets. It was the Cowboy Rides Away concert. It's on Apple Music if you ever want to listen. But they had, you know, Alan Jackson came in, Martina McBride, all these celebrities would come up and they'd sing duets with them. So we got almost right to the end, and the band was, or the stage was like, it was going in a circle. What do you call that? Like, it was on like a...
Oh, rotating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like rotating. Sorry, stage. Rotating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like sometimes you'd be at the back of the stage, but then you'd be at the front. And then we figured... because like we kept looking around and there was people crying, like there was 110,000 people at AT&T Stadium, right? Like,
yeah,
it wasn't just like a 10,000 person concert. And we're having a hell of a time, and like I just love country music. I grew up in Alberta, Canada, and it was like we had nothing but a country station, like the old stuff, like, you know, Alan Jackson, Merle Haggard, Buck Owens, like old school shit. So George Strait was obviously one of my favorites, and we just were having a hell of a time. And then we knew we were going under backstage after to, you know, to say hi. And there's other celebrities there and other athletes there. So, you know, we were looking forward to that. And our buddy was behind us, and me and Marty and his wife and my wife were all sitting four seats. And our buddy EJ says to me, he goes, "Hey, listen," he goes, "he's going to sing this song. And then he's going to go off the stage and he's going to come back out and sing Cowboy Rides Away for his encore. And then he's done. But then he's going to throw his cowboy hat." So he's like, "keep your eyes and, you know, your arms up." And I'm thinking to him, yeah, like 110,000 people, like I'm going to wait for him to fucking chuck a cowboy hat. Like there's no chance, right? He comes out and he just kills Cowboy Rides Away, and a couple of the other, you know, celebrities get up, and the band's like, you know, they're doing the delay, and they do one more chorus, and it's almost not ending, right? And so he finishes the song and everyone's up, and like everyone stands up and everyone's just like giving him the standing ovation, and he walks off the stage. So I said to my wife, I go, well, so much for him throwing that cowboy hat. And all of a sudden he turns around and he starts walking back out, and he grabs his hat, and I'm almost certain that he was waiting for that stage to get to a certain point, because he was throwing it to someone in his family, right? So like it was perfectly timing. I'm not kidding. Like I don't know. Like if you guys have ever seen it on, it's actually on YouTube. Like someone has it on CMT, put it on YouTube. Waits till it comes around, and there's like all, it must have been his grandkids or something, and he goes to chuck this hat, and it, like, I stand up as it comes out, and it landed right on my chest. So I just grabbed it, and I mean, there was like a swarm of people around us, right? Like they were, everybody, I had the guy take off his Rolex watch and be like, my wife wants that hat, I'll trade you this watch. And I was like, no. I'm like, I'm keeping it. Like, I love country music. So then I'm just thinking, like, I got this hat, and I put it right on my head, and we're sweating. It's like 100 degrees, right? And I'm thinking in my head, and then finally all the cops show up, and like there's like 8 cops, and they got me surrounded. Like they got like a big ring around me. They got to get me out of there, right? Because everyone's like grabbing at my clothes, and they want this hat, right? And so they put us around, and we had all the VIP passes. So they walked us, like they got us under the stage, and my wife thinks I have a horseshoe shoved up my ass as it is, because she thinks I just, everything goes in the place, right? She goes, you are the luckiest fucking guy I've ever witnessed. Like, she's like, you win everything. You win every bike you put your name in for, you win everything. So I'm thinking, well, I said to my buddy EJ, I go, I got to get this thing signed. And he goes, oh, no problem, 100%. Like, we'll wait for him to do his media, and then we'll go out there. And so I took the hat off like this. I actually got it upstairs in my closet. But I grab it like this, and there's a authenticity certificate in it. There's his autograph, Cowboy Rides Away, with the date. So I was like, I don't even have to wait to get it signed. So we waited, and I ended up – we didn't end up meeting him because we had to get out of there, but – when he came and dropped the puck at our game, when I was working for the Stars a couple years ago there, Brendan Morrow brought it up to him because Mo knows him. And he said, this is the guy that caught your hat. And he goes, he looked at me and George Strait's like, cool ass voice. He's like, I always wondered who caught that hat. And I'm like, well, I did.
That's like the end of a movie. That's like the end of a country music movie. Like, that's how. Yeah. Well, that's that's crazy. And I was going to ask, because I remember I was at the game, and I felt so bad for Selena Ray at that game too.
Oh yeah,
because you have George Strait, the king of country, dropping the puck, and then the national anthem comes on, and people are assuming,
yeah, he was, hey, gonna, this,
yeah, and I heard a couple boos, and I was like, oh, this is so bad. But yeah, I felt so bad for Selena Ray, because it's like, Even if he drops the puck, you got to follow up the king of country. Like, she's fantastic, but yeah, that was insane.
Yeah,
man. Gonna follow this up. This is an awesome. That's an awesome story about it.
Just
Texas
one second.
Legend.
I just gotta plug this in.
No worries.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, I was gonna say. So that was awesome story about one Texas legend. So I wanted to segue into another Texas legend, which is this podcast namesake, which is Whataburger, and wanted to check with you on one, if you're a Whataburger fan from your time down here, and if so, what is your go-to order?
I honestly have never had a Whataburger.
Oh my goodness.
I was more of an in and out kind of guy.
Oh no.
Sponsorships.
Man.
Oh my goodness. We well, one, there's always room to grow. And two, we the first Whataburger's on me. I'll write that down. If you come back to Dallas, we'll have to make it happen, because that's like a Hatfield and McCoy's situation down here. That's okay. We're all a little. It felt just like I got punched in the chest by Vern Fiddler on the boards. No, well, we can't appreciate you taking the time, or we can't appreciate you enough taking the time and chatting with us and giving us a little insight on your time here in Dallas. Are you currently working with any charities or any nonprofits that we can, you know, toss out there for the listeners to take a look at, maybe, you know, donate towards?
I'm not right now. We've been just helping out with the food bank here in Kelowna a little bit. There's, some issues there with the pandemic and that, but I plan, if we come back down to Dallas there to get the my golf tournament going. We had a Fiddler Fights Cancer Charity Golf Tournament that. So if you want to tell anybody, we'll be looking for that in the near future here. We had a really good turnout the last time. We raised over $100,000 for kids with leukemia, and but help out as much as you can right now. There's a lot of people in stress with COVID, and you don't see it all the time, but anywhere you can help with these charities, they've probably taken the biggest hit out of anything. People don't have their wallets open like they usually do, but anything helps. And keep your eye on some of these charities, and not just cancer, but there's food shelters and other things that you can help with.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to help out any way that we can, especially with the weather the way it's been. I know that's been pretty harsh on a lot of people in your area and our area as well. But that's really all we had for this. Again, thank you so much for coming on. We have a couple of sign-offs. I'll go ahead and take Jason's, as he could not be with us. And Vern, don't take this in a weird way, but his sign-off is stay moist. It's a purely hockey team thing. You just got to roll with it. Shout out to the pylons on that one. Patrick, if you want to toss your sign-off there, and then we'll see if Vern Fiddler's got a sign-off, and we'll call this a wrap.
Yeah, my sign-off is you got to stay sassy.
That's his New Year's resolution.
Every year, my wife said I didn't give enough attitude just in life in general. So I said, you know what? All right, I'm gonna be a little bit sassier next year, and that was 4 years ago. So still going strong.
Vern, you have a sign off. You wanna toss a sign off out there?
You guys are really putting me on the spot. But before I sign off, I do wanna. You got to connect me with who makes those sweaters, because I know my wife and my kids will all want one of those. So
oh yeah, absolutely. This is the Texas Hockey Apparel Company. I'll be happy to send you the profile on Twitter and get you set up.
My sign off, but we have a thing in my house that we say when we're going to the rink, and it's forecheck, backcheck, paycheck. So I'll sign off with that.
Yes, perfect.
I can send it.
And last but certainly not least, do not ever for any reason forget your Kermit tattoos.